You're listening to a Whales or Whales production.
You're also listening to Whales.
Visit whalesorwhales.com for more projects and shows like this one. This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music news and conversation from ocremix.org.
This week, we'll celebrate the Larrys in our lives, find a suitable replacement for John Williams, and meet up with the other brotherly video game music podcast duo, the Super Mercado Bros.
What? I don't understand what's going on.
Welcome back to the Overclocked Podcast Studios.
Happy Saturday, peeps.
Oh my gosh, don't say that ever again.
Happy Saturday, peeps.
Well, that ruined my dreams. I'm Steven, one of your hosts.
Hi. I'm Brian, your brother.
Yo, and one of our other hosts.
Yes,
sir. Thanks for tuning in to the third episode of the Overclocked Podcast.
Absolutely. I'm excited about it. I'm just actually really excited about my secret song. I don't really care about the rest of the show, but I'm really excited about my secret song.
Okay, let's take bets.
All right.
Let's place our bet on which secret song
Mine.
We think is going to be... All right, I'm going to bet on yours as well.
All right.
I don't have much faith.
I'm not Mine positive is... if you've heard it before. But,
okay, well, what we're already taking bets about and putting money down on the table for are the secret songs, where we try to surprise each other with music that we potentially haven't heard before.
Yeah, so since we're brothers, we have a very similar context of music. Like, we tend to not only listen to the same soundtracks and play the same games growing up, but when we find cool music, we tend to show each other immediately.
And then like it equally.
Yeah, and then like it equally. So it's interesting for us to try to find stuff that matches the other person's tastes that the other person hasn't heard before. One of the prime examples of that before the podcast started was when I found the Mighty Switch Force soundtrack as part of a soundtrack bundle and introduced Steven to Jake Kaufman, telling him he would absolutely love the music, and I was very right.
And I found the Gianna Sisters Twisted Dream guitar solos and knew that that would be right up your alley.
That is a great point.
So let's see if that magic still exists.
Let's start with
your secret song.
All right. Remember, don't look at it.
Right.
One, two, three,
click. Click.
And hope there's no ad.
No ad. Okay. Wait, this might be an ad with a really good song.
No, I don't think it is.
I don't know why, but this is reminding me of Big Giant Circles.
I actually hadn't heard the song before I started this episode. Or no, before, right before the episode. But I knew it would be good.
Okay, I'm waiting. All right, I'm buying this game. What is it?
This is Gianna Sisters, the DLC.
Oh my gosh, it's the new Gianna Sisters?
Yes.
This is the DLC,
Rise of the Owlverlord.
Oh my gosh. I was so prescient with my example before.
Exactly. I didn't want to say anything, but this, okay. I don't know how much people listening to this are enjoying this, but this is my music. Like, this is what I love in music so much.
No, stop talking. Just listen to it. Oh, those bleeps.
Yeah, they did a really good job with those.
Bleep. So what is it? What is the magic about this kind of guitar solo that makes us so excited when we'll turn down some more standard metal mixes?
So that's something very interesting at the Gianna Sisters soundtrack I wanted to talk about, is how they ended up making... Basically, they had the original composer, whose name I really should remember. Do you remember? It's Chris something, I believe.
Oh my gosh, yes I do. It is Chris Hulsbeck.
Yeah, Chris Hulsbeck, thank you. So the original composer came back and made music for it. I think some of it was even remixes of music from the original Gianna Sisters. And they also brought in a metal band to make these metal versions. And what's really interesting about the music is I don't love Chris Heelsbeck's versions. I just find the samples he uses not great.
They're kind really of good melodies, but they lack a little bit of
the low impact.
Yeah.
And then I've listened to the stuff that this metal band, I think Machine Supremacy is the name. I could be, or Machine, I don't know. But I've listened to some of the stuff they've put out that are not Giana Sisters tracks, and they are just more traditional metal kind of sound, much more minor chords, and just doesn't fit the upbeat nature of video game music as much. And I think it's that marrying of a video game music composer's sensibilities with the style and energy and instrument
the
choice
power
of a metal
and the
band.
Raw talent from those, from that metal band.
Right.
But then you have the sort of cheery,
right,
movement focused, just good time.
So what I absolutely love from metal music, or not even metal, from rock music and guitar work is when you take it and make it super upbeat, major chords and just like happy stuff. I can't get enough of that. That's one reason I love a ton of OC Remix stuff goes into that territory often.
Yeah.
Also
like
stuff
level
like
99,
Steve Vai is really good at it. Oh, yeah. A lot of Sonic music is good at that, which is why I have a soft spot for Sonic music. Even non-video game stuff like Trans-Siberian Orchestra for Christmas music does this a lot too.
Yeah.
So I just, anytime I can find that in music, I just love it because so much metal is so different and strays into territory that I just don't find nearly as melodic or as engaging as this.
Okay, well, the bet is still on to see whose song is better.
Yeah.
Trying to listen to my secret song.
All right.
One, two, three, click.
Grant Kirkhope? It's like a solo oboe. This is really underwhelming.
Just let it soak in.
Did you make this?
No.
Okay.
I'm not that good. So, any guesses at all as to what soundtrack this game? I mean, what game the soundtrack is from?
Tulip.
Not a bad guess.
I don't know.
It's actually from Tamagotchi Life.
Oh my gosh. This is terrible.
No, it isn't. Let me tell you the context. Tamagotchi Life has some amazing music. And this is one of my favorite tracks. Because it plays when you're at the afternoon market. So every once in a while, one of the Tamagotchi Life Miis, because it's sort of that game where you put all your Miis into a little town and they live their weird lives. And I mean their weird lives. And they open up a market in the afternoon. And so Miis walk by for as long as you'll stare at it and no one ever buys anything. And the little Mii is standing in a stall going like, "Fresh pineapple! Get your fresh pineapple! Delicious pineapple!" Until you buy something or leave. And I think it's very true.
I have to agree with the commenter on YouTube, Groose, 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 who says, "Sounds like Kapora Gabora's theme." Also, yes. That is the best name. I think his picture is Groose.
Yep. Yes, I believe so.
This is the best track you could have had in comparison to the one I brought.
The reference to Giana Sisters in the intro, the contrast between these two songs, it seems like we planned this out masterfully,
this
but
is our
we really
best
put it together
song
the last
segment
second.
Yet.
That yeah, it really is.
And so I'm just listening to the Giana Sisters song again.
Well, which one did you like more?
You know, if I was selling fresh pineapples in an afternoon market, I would still probably prefer to listen to the Giana Sisters.
Well, let your
song.
Voice be heard and do hashtag.
Oh, we should do that. We should have people vote on which of our secret songs are better.
You're right. Okay, we're starting a new thing.
All right, so
tweet
at us.
Which one do you think is better?
With hashtag secret song.
Yeah.
And let us know, and we'll tally the votes, and each week we'll see who wins, and then that, whichever one wins, I don't know, we'll tweet out the link of that song.
We'll push
something.
The other person out a window.
We need to do something. We'll have to figure out what the other person has to do.
We don't want a reward, we want a punishment. That makes it more fun.
Exactly.
All right, well, while we ponder our own demises, let's move on to the next segment, the Remix Rewind, to catch up on last week's video game remixes.
Woo!
Larry wears a leisure suit, and stars an old Sierra adventure game. Yes, this is true. But Larry also goes by the name of Lion Tamer, judges remixes, and manages the communities of Overclocked Remix itself.
I would honestly put this maybe in my top five of anything I've ever heard.
Chimpazella and Will Rock's new remix, Larry, is a tribute to Larry, Leisure Suit, and Lion Tamer alike. In short, so extraordinarily very Larry, it's scary. Legendarily revolutionary. I had to hit the library dictionary for vocabulary to write this commentary.
Whimsy, majesty, and the wondrous sense of flight all come to mind when listening to Zach Parrish's If You Believe. Honored with being the first Mother remix to grace OC Remix's archives, this track is brought to life not only by Zach's keen ear for orchestral composition, but with additional performances of Jeff Ball on lead violin, Michaela Nachtigall on supporting violin, and Alex Ripple on flute. This was originally produced for the Super Smash Bros. Remix album, Harmony of Heroes Final Smash, which we heartily recommend you check out in full.
Cascatalo, I'm really sorry, pronouncing things that's not my strong suit, replicates the sound of science shooting off like sparks in a high-energy Portal 2 remix called Motion Sickness. Hearing all of this controlled madness gives me the feeling that something really awesome or really world-ending is about to happen.
What happens when you combine Jeremy Soule, Brandon Strader, and a vocalist as gifted as Cheryl Norfair? Well, this, apparently. Embrace the Night is a remix of Guild Wars 2's Fear Not This Night, and is part of Brandon Strader's upcoming vocal remix album, Endless Night. Rock and folk have always proven a powerful combination, and Embrace the Night is no exception. Described by Brandon Strader as a spiritual successor to Dovahkiin, his high-charged remix of Skyrim's Dragonborn, I can certainly hear the similarities.
Just gets better from here on out. So, to listen to this and a whole bunch more, head over to ocremix.org.
We're back and ready for our next segment, Ripped, Zipped, and Extracted from the Headlines, which, I mean, is news. So,
yeah. It's the fancy way of saying news.
We've only got a couple pieces of news today.
But the first one's not a lot was happening, from what I could tell, in the video game music world. But I thought this little bit was very interesting. Star Wars Battlefront.
Yes.
It is a game we were playing and enjoying heartily last night.
Hardly. Yes, we were. We bought that game a few days ago and are desperately trying to find time to play it and doing a very poor job. Yeah. We got, you know, like two or three matches in last night, and it was so much fun.
Well, two or three matches is enough because there's a lot packed into every single second in Star Wars Battlefront. It's that a really cool game. We're big Star Wars fans.
Oh, so yes. It's absolutely.
Sort of like a dream come true. But the music is exceptional, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. It's what's really cool about it, though, is that it doesn't... I mean, obviously, it borrows from Star Wars music, but then there's stuff in there that isn't from the movies.
And it sounds like it's from the movies. It really does.
Like, the production values are phenomenal. It just sits right beside it. It's not like when you're back playing Rebel Strike and suddenly the MIDI song pops up and you're just cringing.
And so I poked around and did a little bit of research and found out that the composer is named Gordy Hobb.
Okay.
And he has composed for other Star Wars games before. He did some Old Republic stuff and Kinect Star Wars.
Old Republic does have some pretty fantastic music as well.
Nice. But I just thought it was worth mentioning for Battlefront because I think a lot of people might not even notice or just assume that it's John Williams stuff from maybe the prequels that they haven't watched as much or maybe they haven't seen the original movies in a while.
I was even wondering if it might be stuff from 7.
Yeah, from the new movie and whatnot. But no, a ton of it is completely ground up original music.
That's so cool. It's really well done stuff.
Yeah, I was listening to one. You can only really find it piecemeal on YouTube.
Yeah.
From what I've seen so far, but one that was called the Horde Fight Theme. At least that's where I found it. And I could tell some specific references to Empire Strikes Back and stuff, but the melodies were new, and it was exceptionally good. And
wow, really gets down. I'm listening to this now. He gets down that John Williams' use of instruments.
Yeah.
Like, he'll use even the same flourishes with, like, the na-na-na on Hordes and that
controlled
sort of stuff.
Controlled chaos, the stuff that John Williams makes sound easy but no one else can do.
Right.
This Hob fellow was doing.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. So it definitely look at some of those pieces. If you don't own the game, go on YouTube or something, look around and see if you can identify which ones are source material, original source material, and which ones were made up, because sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, that's amazing that they got. I'm curious, like, what they recorded this with, like which orchestra. Or
it was the London Symphony Orchestra at Abbey Road.
Wait, really?
Yes,
that's
really
fantastic.
I know. So
all
they
the comments are like, I thought John Williams wrote this.
And that's the thing about Battlefront is, I mean, I love the game so far. I'm just riding on the Star Wars high. I don't know how good of a shooter it is. Mm-hmm. It's my kind of shooter, so I'm just going to enjoy it with its arcade fun.
I think we put it best, and I've seen this sentiment in other reviews, which is like, it's not a game with a Star Wars skin like most Star Wars games that have come out. Like, you know, this is Battlefield with the Star Wars skin, or this is, you know, Age of Empires with the Star Wars skin. Instead, it's a Star Wars thing with a game skin. Like, the game part isn't that important. It just literally makes you feel like you're fighting in Star Wars, so you don't need that much mechanical complexity.
But after years of having no Star Wars games, and being a very enthusiastic Star Wars fan,
and too many games put the game first and the Star Wars second. Like, you play the game and you're like they're like, how can we make Force fit in as a mechanic in this game?
You know, the Force meter, just like magic meters and RPGs and that sort of thing.
But this game is just like, we're going to be
Star Wars.
Hands
down, the most Star Wars-y game I've ever played in my life. So I just think it's cool that they did the same thing with the music.
Oh, yeah. That's
like, you go back and you listen to The Force Unleashed, it has a really astounding Star Wars-like soundtrack. It's almost to this level, but I honestly think that this game surpasses it. And that's a no mean feat.
In terms of at least sounding like Star Wars, like, I literally would have just believed someone who told me this was unreleased music. So.
Definitely.
All right.
So are you going to tell us about the next
one? Well, it has Steven next to the name, so I wasn't.
I stole yours. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, so the next piece of news is that Life is Strange is getting a soundtrack, and it's going to be packaged with the limited edition physical release for consoles. I got this story from VGMOnline.net.
So is the Life is Strange soundtrack good?
It actually is very good. A lot of it is, you know, licensed from various artists, and it really fits it feels like music that the characters in the game would listen to, and I think sometimes they do.
Is it like Gone Home in that sense?
Yeah, it is kind of a bit like Gone Home. Maybe not quite to that extent.
Because I did not like the music in Gone Home.
Oh, no, it's much more...
Like, not the licensed music they had.
Oh, I see. It's much more palatable, indie, sort of thought-provoking.
Okay.
Ballady, sometimes a little bit rockish, you know, it's a...
Yeah.
Those are all of the verbs slash adjectives that I can find for it, but... I just think it's cool that, A, Life is Strange is getting a physical release, and the music does have some original stuff as well by Jonathan Morali. I think mm-hmm. it's original for the game.
Right.
And I listened to it a little bit of it on YouTube,
yeah.
and I was just transported back to the game. So right. it definitely has a kind of aura about it.
Right.
So nice. if you haven't played that game, then I think it's worth checking out. It's a bit of an odd one. Not everyone's going to like it, but if you like the soundtrack from it, then I guess buy it on console, because I don't know of another way to get it. but that happened recently, and I thought that was cool.
All right, that is cool. I kind of need to play that game first, and I'm probably not going to play it on consoles, so...
No, probably maybe not. Yeah. It also comes with an art book, and I think some commentary.
Well, now I'm going to have to change my opinion here. All righty, well, that's the news. Not a crazy week. No cataclysmic.
No giant big releases, OC remix albums, but...
Exactly.
Star Wars and Strange Life.
There you go. All right, so we'll move into our Intune interview now with the Super Mercado Brothers. I'm really excited about this one. We have been longtime friends with Super Mercado Brothers, even back with the old video game music podcast we used to run. And it was fantastic because not only do they run a podcast, but they make music for video games. So we're going to be talking about one of the original tracks they created for an unreleased space shooter.
It's also interesting to note that our past couple of interviews were with OC Remixers remixing stuff, but this is original music from an unreleased video game.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of John Williams before, there are few people who like John Williams more than the Mercado Brothers.
Yes.
That's a huge influence. John Williams and Koji Kondo are probably like the two... huge influences of them,
which explains why they're so good at making music.
Exactly. So yeah, let's head into our Intune interview.
This is the Intune interview, where we talk to composers about the music they compose, and this week in the make-believe OCR podcasting studio we have two very, very special guests. In fact, we're in tune with the Super Mercado Bros, Will and Carl. Hey guys, welcome.
Howdy. Thanks for having us.
Oh, well, thank you for coming here. And Brian's here as well. Hey, Brian.
Heya.
We all made it.
Yes.
So we have known these guys for quite a while. They've appeared on a number of episodes on our podcast Train Station at 8. And we thought we'd bring them back again to interview
them. Yeah, they also run their own podcast.
That is super true. Speaking of which, how about you guys kind of introduce yourselves to those not familiar with you? I'll leave it to you to see who does the introducing.
Well, yeah, we're a video game music duo, brotherly duo. We have our own podcast called the Super Mercado Brothers, in which we share and discuss the best in video game music every week. In addition to that, we compose original game music, whether it be for independent games or these kind of various homage albums that we've kind of been known to do for the past few years. We've did Galaxy, Mega Man, Sonic, all kinds of stuff. So that's pretty much what the Super Mercado Brothers is all about.
Yeah, and we've known the Kellys for a while, like Steven said. It's kind of interesting. We've never met in person because we live in, you know, polar opposite ends of the country. But I feel like we know each other well enough now that if I saw you guys in person, it would be a hugging situation.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Good.
It's always good to know who the huggers are so you can watch out.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't awkwardly say, it's like, is this a hug or is this not a hug?
High five? Kind of moving
maybe
a little
too
close?
Maybe we can test it next MAGFest.
Oh, I hope so. Oh, I hope so. But so, yeah, we have brought you guys here to talk about a specific song from your catalog of mini songs. So could you let the listeners know what you've brought to us today?
Yeah, the track is called Soaring Through the Stars. It was written for, actually, it's sort of a sad story. The game never was released. It was going to be this really awesome 2D side-scroller in kind of an old-school arcade-y style. And we were really excited about all the music and sound that we were creating, but the game project sort of fell through. So we ended up releasing all the music that we had composed on our website, under an album title called Soaring Through the Stars, and it's subsequently...
So this is the titular title. Yeah, this track is the titular title, Stage 1. So this would have been a PC space shooter, if you will. So we had a lot of direction from the developer of the game of like kind of the musical tone he wanted, and then he gave us a little bit of freedom. So this was pretty much the first track we made for the project, and I would say both of our favorite track on the project, and probably one of our favorite tracks we've done so far as the Super Mercado Brothers.
That's very cool. It is kind of tragic that the game didn't come out, but it's so cool that you guys decided to release it anyway.
Right. It makes me wonder how many like soundtracks have gone just lost because of unreleased games.
I know.
I gotta say probably tons, at least from our little experience so far. Definitely a lot.
That's a bummer. But when you say a space shooter, are we talking like shoot 'em up, like side?
Yeah. Yeah. Side scrolling shoot 'em up. Yep.
Cool. Cool. Yeah, the music definitely has that kind of energy to it that I would expect from one of those games.
Yeah, I would consider it would probably be sort of like a, I don't know, a Life Force or an R-type kind of game.
Gotcha. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, as I was listening to it, I could just imagine a bunch of bullets of multicolored variety flying like left to right or up and down or something.
Absolutely.
So I guess with that said, let's give the song a listen and then we can dive into some questions about it.
Was Soaring Through the Stars, Stage 1, from the album Soaring Through the Stars, and composed by the Super Mercado Bros. That is a rocking track. I gotta hand it to you guys. So I'm curious, what I always think of when I hear a track from you guys is, what were the roles? Like, how did you guys split up the
composition? That's what's really exciting about this one.
This track is cool because it marks the first time we ever really kind of consciously divided the roles in what we thought was a unique way. And ever since this project, we have done this so many times and it's always been fairly successful. So for this project, early on, we had the idea of not only, you know, what type of sounds we wanted and what type of, you know, combinations of retro and modern and all that stuff. But for the roles, we were like, okay, Will is just such a melody man. And he's always just so conscious of melody and always wanting to come up with these very immediate and poppy melodies. And for me, I'm much more kind of rhythmic oriented and just kind of more about the groove. So we were like, why don't we just play to our strengths? So why doesn't, you know, Carl, me, come up with the chord progressions and the groove and the bass line and all that stuff, and Will just writes the melody on top of it.
The cool thing about how this worked, though, is that we really kind of took that concept to as far as it could go. Because not only was I writing the melody and he was writing the chords, I was literally getting from him the completed track minus the melody. So I got drums, guitars, you know, chords, and hearing it for the first time, and then I would have to write a melody to that fixed piece of music.
So does that make writing a melody harder or easier?
What's interesting much harder.
It makes it a lot more difficult, because typically the way that I compose music, because like Carl said, I do really care about the melody, I tend to think melody before anything. So if I have like a little nugget for a melody, that will influence what the chord progression will be, what everything will be, the rhythmic structure, time signature, all that stuff. And so it was an interesting challenge to be given these completed things and to write melodies to them, but also to write melodies that felt organic and kind of poppy.
Well, I think what it led Will to do is come up with things he never would have come up with before. Like the melodies for this project, I don't think he ever would have written them if the chords that I established weren't there. So it was kind of meeting in the middle, because I was trying to come up with chords that I thought he would enjoy and that a cool melody would work over. And he was trying to obviously come up with a melody that I would enjoy and that he thought would fit the groove. So it was a really kind of meeting of the minds. But yeah, so for this track as an example, pretty much everything you hear, all the other kind of instruments other than the NES instrument, was my doing in the first, like, you know, 10 seconds of the track. That, you know, was what Will heard. He heard all that stuff, and he had to try
to come up with that family tracker melody. Like we said, we took it to its fullest extent. So not only did I write the melody and he wrote the chords, everything you hear with the chords and groove, he implemented himself. And everything with the melody that you hear, I implemented myself. So we wanted to combine, you know, with the chords, you have real guitar, you have not real drums, but more modern sounding drums. And you have a mixture of
samples,
different chip sounds and FM sounds. But for the melody, I wanted to do it like authentic NES sounding. So I did it in Famitracker. And we chose to just use the square because we thought that was one of the most classic sound. So every track in the album sort of has that combination where the melody sounds like NES, but the chords and groove and everything are a various plethora of other sounds. But it was kind of fun because not only would we write the things separately, we actually kind of produced and sequenced them independently from one another. So just like how I first heard the chords when Carl would send me sort of that finished thing, the first time Carl would hear any bit of melody was when I would send him the finished Famitracker file. So it was kind of fun where we were able to kind of write it together, but also have this sort of separation and be excited by each other's work.
Yeah. I like, well, okay, so you guys were trading ideas back and forth. Did you have like a bunch of revisions in between or any big rejected concepts, or did it sort of just flow together?
Not often.
Surprisingly, no. Yeah, that's what's crazy is that I think one of the reasons why this method, at least for us, had been so successful and something we keep revisiting is because it was surprisingly easy. You know, I would send Will, I don't think there was ever a time where I sent Will a groove or a chord idea and he said, oh, that just doesn't work, or vice versa. I don't think there was ever a melody that I didn't like.
When we were first working on a main menu, we knew we wanted it to be incredibly simple, so just like hardly anything at all. And Carl sent me something that I had trouble writing a melody, and then he immediately sent me something else, and then we worked on that.
Yeah, on the album, there's an unused main menu song. Is that the one you're talking
about?
That's an interesting story, because that was actually the first one we did, and the developer didn't really think it fit the tone he was looking for. So so the actual main menu is our second attempt in order to appease him.
It's our third attempt, because the first attempt was what I was talking about. That's not on the album.
Oh,
that was like there was
so that just never
that
even
Carl
got finished.
Sent that I think was a little too simple that I couldn't a melody on top of it.
It was just one note.
But it
one square wave.
It was really fun to work on, because the other thing is when I would receive these things, I had to figure them out on the piano, because part of the thing that's distracting that would be impossible if you're just listening to the track, you know, it's really hard to kind of come up with a melody of that. So I'd kind of have to simplify it and figure out what are the chords that are happening here, be able to kind of get it under my fingers when playing it on the piano and treat it as if I had come up with those chords and that I was writing a melody to it. And then also listening to the track and hearing like rhythmically what sort of beats aren't really being fulfilled in the harmonic range, you know, what isn't being fulfilled musically that could fit in there without, you know, crunching against everything else and creating too much dissonance and stuff.
Right. It probably really helps though, that you know Carl's style so well, right, being able to write around it.
Yeah, that's, of, you know, that's the only reason why this worked, is because we had been doing this kind of thing for so many years, as far as, you know, we would share ideas, you know, like, for the Sonic-esque albums I made, Will was the first person I ever showed the ideas to, and he would kind of give me his ideas. So we were always sharing kind of back and forth as a sounding board. But our initial intention, or our initial hope, was that once the finished song was there, no one would be able to tell that it was composed of these separate parts put together. It's just supposed to be one kind of full, big experience. And I will say, hopefully that's what we achieved with this project,
with
is
all of our music,
just feels like one thing.
We like try to explore different avenues of collaboration. So in some projects, we'll just, entire tracks will be done by different people. And in some projects, we'll do it where, you know, I write the A section and Carl writes the B section entirely. And so we wanted to make it so that everything we put out there we thought was good, but that you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell who did what and how the roles were divided, and that there wasn't really kind of a gap between where one person's ideas began.
Yeah, what's funny is that this is the song we're talking about today, and this is one of the easiest examples of seeing who did what, who's responsible for what on the track.
I was about to say that's so easy.
Yeah, everything that's not Fammy Tracker, everything that's not NES is me, and everything that's NES is Will. It's just such an easy split.
What we're okay with is that, like, on paper, it sounds like those roles are really uneven, because, you know, it seems like Carl is doing so much more. But the thing that we were okay with is that, really, the melody, in some ways, is the most important aspect of a song, because that's what people go singing. So I was okay with, you know, letting him take such a responsibility for all the other aspects, because I knew that I got complete control over what the melody was going to be. So even though it does feel like it's still sort of, they each have an equal weight.
Well, it feels reminds me of, like, you can have a karaoke version of a song, or you could have a song that's just the sung lyric, and they're kind of both complete in their own way.
Right.
Like, those are kind of two
parts.
The drum and the bass work so well together, they're kind of two halves of the same whole. So
that's an interesting parallel.
Yeah.
So something I was curious about, you guys mentioned, you know, the live guitar and then the Fammy Tracker on top of it. What inspired you to, like, merge those two elements before? Because it seems a lot of your other music is, like, purely Fammy Tracker stuff.
Sure. Well, I mean, some of that was conversations with the developer. I believe that he mentioned he wanted to have kind of this combination of, he wanted it to feel kind of classic and retro,
like,
but also to, yeah, but also to be modern too. He didn't want it to just be 8-bit. He didn't want it to just be all metal. He did give us some examples of a couple different metal soundtracks. For the life of me, I can't remember them now. It was a long time ago, but he did talk specifically about metal and rock. So I knew that, okay, at the very least, we have to have distorted guitar in this project. So that was also just really the only metal element.
It was just playing to what we were able to do. You know, I had recently learned how to use Fammy Tracker, so I knew that that was something that I could, you know, put together. And if we wanted to combine something kind of unique that you had never heard before. So we wanted it to sound video gamey and retro, but, like, not of anything that you could point to.
Yeah. And part of the, you know, the way that we made it sound our own is, as far as, like, the drum samples, those were all kind of created on our own. We would take a combination of a bunch of different drum sounds and kind of create our own snare sample and our own kick sample, and just have a really quirky combination of instruments. And obviously the guitar I recorded, you know, because, again, it's something that I can do. I can play guitar. So, yeah, let's have that in here. And then using amp modeling software, that's how I got the distorted sound. And then the idea of having it just enough in the mix so that you can feel that it's there, but it's actually pretty quiet. The guitar, it's actually kind of hard to really distinguish it, but if you muted that channel, you'd be like, wow, where is everything? So it is very important, but it's kind of something that you just kind of subtly feel in the mix.
And speaking of that guitar, correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen a lot of tracks from you guys that use electric guitar. I was kind of surprised that it popped up. Is
that's
this
true
something you guys, like, are not used to working with, or you just not happen to release music like
that? I think honestly, for whatever reason, just genre, just the types of projects we do, it isn't really called for that much. This was one where it definitely was called for, and that's why we went with it and had a great time with it. We have used it every now and then in another project.
We did for a game that actually is released on Android. It's called Pocket Defender. It's sort of like this missile defense kind of game. And that we blended, you know, orchestral with rock and metal sounds. But that was where, you know, as you know, your towers would get destroyed, the music would change from orchestral to become progressively more rock. And so in that, we used a lot of electric guitar and electric bass and really tried to do an authentic rock sound and then an authentic kind of metal sound for the final track. So we had some experience doing that. And, you know, Carl and our other brother Marty, they've been in bands and they play a lot of kind of rock and guitar music. So it's not like something that is completely unfamiliar. I think it's just what we may have been known for is writing really sort of pleasing, fun, upbeat, kind of swung Mario-esque, kind of fun major key pieces. Not really anything rocking, but we'd love
Mario isn't really known for his shredding.
Yeah. Not you know, funky R&B sonic-y stuff.
Yeah.
Neither of which have a lot of guitar, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was happy to hear it. It was kind of fun. It got me to perk up a little bit. So kind of speaking of that was one of my personal highlights of the album and of the song as well. But is there like a favorite moment or like melody or technique that you guys were really proud of that you were able to sneak in here?
Why don't we each take a turn? Carl, what's your thing?
For me, I think it probably makes sense to talk about the other person's contributions. For me, my favorite part in this of Will's melody is the part that... And then there's that other voice that kind of descends. It's just a really pretty use of harmony. And it's just kind of that thing where I think it's a really beautiful melody, but it also feels vast and kind of evokes like the epicness of space. But it also rocks too. And I also really enjoyed how my initial riff, that boobity-boobity-boobity-boobity, that really kind of fast, shreddy thing, Will really contrasted that with his melody. Yeah. He didn't try to kind of, I was expecting he would kind of take that momentum and run with it, but he really just did something completely different, which I love.
Well, thanks, cool, man. That's great to hear. Yeah, it's fun revisiting some of this music. I think if we're talking about each other, I think I tend to agree with Carl as far as like the melody moments. This track, the reason why we picked it is I was just really happy. I felt the elements came together where everything felt organic, and I felt like the melody really did have sort of an independence, and the chords felt inevitable. You know, everything worked together. I think my favorite stuff from Carl is just all the grooves that he came up with, particularly on the main menu theme. It's just really satisfying, and I think it led me to come up with like a melody that I wouldn't have. One of my favorite moments from him is in the stage two theme. He actually wrote this intro riff that I love that goes and it was so good that when I had to write a melody to the song, I couldn't stop playing his riff because it felt so satisfying to me melodically that I really had to go in a completely different direction in order to come up with a melody.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, I think I wasn't asked, Stephen, but I think one of my personal moments from this song is that bass line is fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
and I believe
it's so active. I love active bass lines like that.
I believe in this track that's actually an Amiga sampled bass.
Oh, cool.
So for the bass, that was another fun thing where every track it's kind of all over the place. Most tracks it is always some sort of retro sound, but yeah, this bass on this track is an Amiga sample.
Interesting. I can see that too.
In hindsight, I really should have figured out how you guys divvied up the duties of the song. Like, it makes so much sense. They're so separate and so individually you. But kind of as a whole, I was thinking about this this kind of as a stage, as a level. And did you guys kind of decide ahead of time what tone you were going for? Because, like, this is the first stage of the game. It's kind of setting the...
It's sad because this game will never be released, but there was a lot of thought about that, and there was a lot of talk between us and the developer. One of the things that was going to happen is this first stage was supposed to be, like, incredibly epic and super intense because it was actually going to be a dream, where at the end of the stage, it turns out that was actually just in an arcade, and it's, like, the main character. That wasn't real.
Oh.
And then the second stage was when it actually turns real and aliens invade.
Way more like intense and epic in the tone of each one, where this one was supposed to feel really more soaring and like a dream. And that's why I think just all the elements of it really worked out. Like,
gotcha.
I don't know. It just kind of has that quality where the next ones really kind of get more rocking and intense.
Mm-hmm. That definitely
yeah, it seems like
sense.
It very much just that first stage thing for me where it's like drawing you in and getting you pumped up. It's stuff that I think like Shovel Knight got down with Strike the Earth and that a lot of old games were really good at. That first stage is so important to like hook the listener on the music.
Right, I agree.
And this Absolutely. Definitely helps me. So.
But I think the other thing that was kind of fun is he kind of gave us some freedom of coming up with like level ideas and coming up with like things in the song where he had specific ideas for it, but then when we would come up with musical things, he kind of would let us, you know, come up with a few stage themes ahead, and just he said, "I'll be inspired by your music to sort of design some of these levels because some of those aspects weren't created yet." He must not have been very inspired because the game did fall through.
He just got too distracted listening to the music. Never finished it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I've got the soundtrack. I can just chill out to this. So, so speaking of inspiration, I guess kind of last question. Were there any like other games or musical inspirations that you guys were drawing from?
Well, I know mine. Carl, do you...
Yeah, Will, you can start with yours.
Mine was definitely the Gradius games and also Life Force, or I think it's called like Salamander on the arcade version. We had played tracks from Gradius 3 and Salamander like on a recent episode of the podcast, and we were talking about how incredible it is that that melody can really capture the feeling of flight with some of kind of its higher leaps or just the quality of it. It really does feel like soaring. It feels like flight. And so there wasn't really any specific melodic moments, but definitely when I was writing the melody to this first theme, I knew I'm like, I really want to capture that effect because this is the same type of game and we really want to make it soar. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons we named it Soaring Through the Stars is just because
right.
we did try to go for that kind of effect.
Yeah, for me, obviously, since I was doing a lot more of the FM kind of 16-bit sounding stuff, the Genesis was really the name of the game. And that's one of the things he said, too, is he specifically cited Thunder Force 4 specifically. So that was a soundtrack I listened to a lot, particularly the track, for me, Don't Go Off, which is the course select from Thunder Force 4. That is almost like eerily similar to the main menu theme that we ended up going with for the project. So a lot of influence from that track specifically. But in general, a lot of like really kind of solid Genesis funky music was very influential to me. As well as
influences were actually 8-bit influences and your influences were 16-bit influences and that they were able to work together. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and there was actually, for me, one of the most striking influences was this arcade game called Battle Garega, which was composed by Manabu Namiki, which is an arcade game in like mid-90s. And there's this track called Fly to the Laden Sky, which was, not surprisingly, stage one of that game. And so that opening riff that I wrote was definitely inspired by that track. So that was another influence for me.
It sounds like you guys knew the tone, you knew the feeling and the style of game you were going for, and you were able to jump into it with a pretty rad collaboration. I really liked how it came out.
Well, thank you.
All right, well, that should about wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for coming on here.
Thank you.
Absolutely, our pleasure.
Oh, of course.
And where do you want people to find you out there on the internet?
SuperMercadoBrothers.com is where you can find our website, and that has our podcast, our original music. It has a bio and everything. That's sort of our main website. And if you're specifically looking for the music that we've composed, you know, you can find it at our website, but you can also find it at music.supermercadobrothers.com.
Fantastic. And yeah, that's all. Is that still Pay What You Want?
Yeah,
it is.
It is.
Nice. So like you said, Will, you can pay $100 for an album if you want. So go ahead. No one's stopping you, folks.
No dollars for it.
Yeah, exactly. Anywhere you want.
Mix it up. Surprise them.
Totally.
Well, thanks again, Will and Carl. It was a pleasure as always.
Thanks for having us.
I have no doubt that we will find a way to get you back on the show sometime soon.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. See you guys later.
Take care.
That was our InTune interview, and now it's time to set things on their way.
It's time to close down shop.
Yep.
It's time to open the afternoon market.
So, gosh, I really hope that song is playing now. That should be our song for the send-off.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Overclocked Podcast. We have a little bit more after we say our fancy words here, which is to say, if you want to get in touch with us, you should do that on Twitter. We are OCR Podcast over there. You can also email us at podcast@ocremix.org. And you can find us on the forums at www.ocremix.org.
Nice. We are also a production of the Whales Are Whales Network. So if you want to find other cool shows like this with other cool people like us, check out whalesarewhales.com. That's whales, A-R-E, whales.com. And you can find all our shows there on the front page. You like Hearthstone? You like anime? You like hearing us talk about things that aren't Hearthstone or anime? Well, you can find all of those on Whales Are Whales.
But you might wonder, why would you want to contact us in the first place? Well, let me tell you. You can give us your opinions, and we might change the show accordingly. You can give us new ideas. You can give us criticisms. Or you could, A, vote on which of our secret songs you liked more. Or, B, you could submit a song for the playlist.
I have a sinking feeling that I am going to lose the competition. I think Zach's going to write in and vote for your song, and I'm just going to lose, and I'm going to feel really bad about that.
Well, I already feel sorry for you, Brian, because right. I'm going to win, and I'm going to wear the crown, and you're going to have to be pushed out a window.
Or whatever it is we decide on. Well, let's move on to the playlist.
Okay. The playlist is a weekly collection of recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is Songs of the 3DS. The Clock Tower. Originally from Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, remixed by Sixto Sounds, and submitted by Tamias.
Maruniku Shop from Code of Princess, submitted by Spicy Curry.
Athena Sykes, Courtroom Revolutionaire, from Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, Dual Destinies, submitted by Phoenix Down.
You Have Power Like Mine from Fire Emblem Awakening, submitted by me. Reaper's Line of Sight from Kid Icarus Uprising, submitted by me. Been listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is Nostalgia. Dig deep into your heart for sentimental memories and warm feelings. To submit your suggestions or just say, hey, what's up? Hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast. Email us at podcast@ocremix.org or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom.
Someday you go through the rain. Someday you feed on a tree frog. It's ordeal, the trial to survive, for the day we see new light.
So yeah, let's head into our in-tune interview. I like our new bumpers.